He goes back to the DOS days. He's now developing games under Windows, and his games are not only legendary in the blind community, but they're absolutely free. Of course, I'm talking about Jim Kitchen. A couple of the games that he's written were reviewed by Chris Skarstad a couple of weeks ago here on Main Menu. And over the 14 months that Main Menu has been running, we've had a number of requests for us to get Jim Kitchen on the program to talk about his accessible games. So we're delighted to welcome Jim to Main Menu. Thanks for joining us on the show, Jim, because there have been a lot of people who've asked that we have a chat to you. And I've had a look at the site. There are so many excellent games that you have. How did you get started in this? Take us back to when you started writing these games.
Well, I actually took like a half a semester programming course when I was back in high school. But that was COBOL programming, and the school didn't even have a computer, but I knew right away that I enjoyed computer programming. Then about 1980, I got my first home computer. It was a Texas Instruments 994A, and I just typed in the programming examples and started playing with them. And after playing some video games, I knew I wanted to write video computer games, so that's what I started doing. And I did the same thing with an Atari 800XL and then an IBM PC Junior. Then in about 1990, I got my first talking computer with JAWS for DOS version 1 and an Accent synthesizer. And my first games weren't actually speech-friendly. I didn't know how to write speech-friendly games, so I also wrote JAWS macro script files to make them talk correctly. But then a gentleman from Henner Joyce told me how to make them speech-friendly, so all of my DOS games now will speak correctly with any of the DOS screen readers.
You know, the Atari 800XL, I used to have one of those too. I don't know too many blind people that use those. How did you get around using it? Did you have the cassette drive for it and everything like that?
Actually, I had a floppy drive for it.
Oh, but wow.
I wasn't blind at the time.
Okay. Oh, well, that explains it then.
Right. No,
yeah.
That's in 1990, I got my first talking computer.
Right.
I have RP and have just, you know, slowly lost my sight.
Okay.
So at the time that I first started, I had sight.
You could make them talk, though. There was a thing that they had on those called SAM, the Software Automatic Mouth.
Right. I did have a copy of that, and that was really fun, but it wasn't exactly like a screen reader.
It certainly was not. It had good sound, though, for its day. You know, you could do, I think, 4 or even 8-part harmony and kind of MIDI synthesis type sound.
Yes, that was the nice thing about the Atari is you, in all, you know, you could, even in your games and stuff, you could have 4 different sounds at a time. So I thought it did the speech really nice, and I really enjoyed that, and that was the first computer speech that I ever heard, even though it wasn't a screen reader. It was nice, you know.
I wonder whether the fact that you lost your sight over time actually influenced you to start working on the games, because it seems to me that games for the blind on the PC were an area where there wasn't really a heck of a lot happening for quite a while.
I think so, because I actually did play video games, and I liked them very much, and I had already known I liked computer programming, and so when I played video games, I knew I wanted to write computer video games, and I did enjoy them, but at that time the home computers weren't that strong, so, but then when I did lose my sight and started, you know, with a talking computer, I just continued, you know, writing games in BASIC, and Didn't have the pretty pictures anymore, but I tried to make them speech-friendly and still make them fun for, you know, speech synthesizers and stuff.
We'll talk specifically about some of the games soon, but you've got quite a library there, a lot for DOS and an increasing number for Windows. How do you give them away? I mean, they must take you a heck of a long time to program and debug and all of those things.
A lot of the time is spent just thinking about it beforehand and getting it all figured out in my mind. You're actually supposed to draw a flow chart, but I've never figured out how to do that without sight. So a lot of it's just the pre-planning and then, of course, typing it all in. And I test play the games a lot. It takes me a lot of time to debug them, test play them, and stuff like that. I don't know. have just never charged for them. I just enjoy sharing them. The best part for me is that I've wanted these games, and as you say, there wasn't games for us, and I just wanted to play those games, so I wrote them and got them to how I wanted them, and then I very much enjoyed sharing them.
What's the favorite game of yours that you've written?
The last one I wrote, of course. it's always kind of that way, but I still play many of them. The golf game is one of my favorites. Hangman, baseball, the sports games, but even life, Yahtzee. I don't know. I still play most of them all the time. Of course, all the gambling, the casino games, the trucker games, fun. But right now I'm playing still my Mach 1 car racing game.
Tell me a bit about that. That sounds like it's quite a sound intensive game too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually the first game that I've written because in Windows you can do so much more with the WAV files. It's really my first game that really reminds me of when I could play video games. It's continuous action, totally interactive. It's not a move oriented game. It's just continuous action. And it is all sound. You have to listen to where you're at on the track and avoid the other cars. And a lot of it also is knowing the track so that you know how sharp each turn is, and it just takes a lot of practice to get to know the track so you can drive it well.
So the object of the game is to clock up a good time zipping around one of the tracks that are available.
Yes. Yeah, there's five different tracks. They're each different. And you can choose a difficulty level. You can just run the track with no other cars on it, or you can race with one other car or multiple other cars, and you can also decide how many laps you want to try to complete.
And I noticed that some of your games are actually self-voicing. Do you do those with just the use of WAV files, or have you licensed the Eloquence voice? How does that work?
I just had a bit of trouble writing Windows games that would work with all the different Windows screen readers, so I decided that self-voicing was the way to go. I just record the Eloquence voices as WAV files and then, use those to do the speech. It's not quite as smooth as we get out of regular speech, but they seem to work pretty good for the games. Because I try to conserve space and do pieces, parts, just record a word or two or three and then put them together in the games as needed.
So does that mean that there's no ability at this stage to adjust the speech rate and pitch, that sort of thing?
You can adjust the rate, which also adjusts the pitch, because with the software I'm using, it enables me to change the frequency, the speed that the WAV files played at. So it does adjust the rate, but unfortunately it also adjusts the pitch at the same time.
I see that you have a whole page devoted to trivia games, and there's an engine that you download, and then a series of files that you can use to quiz yourself on a whole range of topics. I'm going to see whether I can get 100% in the Beatles trivia file.
There you go.
Yeah, I know something about that. That's a groovy thing. People can obviously write their own trivia sets. Is that how it works?
Yeah, and I appreciate if people do write them and send them to me. I put them up on my webpage. That's where most of the files for the trivia game are from. Just people from all over have written them and then sent them to me, and I put them up on my webpage so you can download them for the engine.
Is that just a simple format to a text file?
You can do it in just a regular text file, but there's also, I believe, I included an editor. No, I don't think I included an editor, but there's examples, and the format's just very simple. And you can just use a regular text editor, and then it will convert it to make it a trivia file for the game.
For parents like me who have younger children, they may be very interested in your Snakes and Ladders game, and I was making the point before we started recording that it's sometimes really difficult to play with software when you're a blind parent with sighted children because so much of it's highly graphical and not terribly accessible.
I tried to do some, even the car racing game might be good for slightly older children. The Snakes and Ladders game is for a bit younger children with a lot of animal sounds and music, and it's almost educational, you know, teach you how to count and things like add and count, and I have gotten comments from it, you know, kids like it, but adults like it too. Just like I say, some of my other games are more children-oriented, but adults seem to like them too, so.
That's a really interesting point, because for blind children who are trying to get to use a computer, you know, there are all sorts of utilities out there to help children develop their mouse skills and a few for keyboard skills, but I guess there's a real market out there for good quality educational focused software for younger blind children as well.
Oh, is there? I try to write some games for children, just and just in general, I hope that my games will help blind people who are new to computers to get a little bit interested and maybe learn a bit about their computers to help, you know, keep their interest in them. And especially for blind children, I, you know, get them at least started on the computer.
Mm. How do you make the decision about what game you're going to work on? How does the genesis of one of your games come about?
I don't know how to answer that. Right now I'm kind of waiting to be inspired for a new game. I'd like to do another one, you know, the action game like the car racing game, but nothing has come into my brain yet, so I might work on converting the golf game to a Windows game in the meantime, and hopefully something will just pop into my brain, you know?
What do you think of the idea of internet-aware games, so that I could play golf with you all the way from New Zealand, and you're sitting there in Ohio somewhere?
I think that'd be great. I wish I knew how to do that. I'm not sure how you write games like that. Maybe someday, but that would be fun too, because a lot of sighted people do play games, you know, multiple user games through the internet. I hear that there are some out there now. I just don't know how to write them.
Oh, yeah, there's some pretty amazing stuff coming out of some of those companies. But what are some of the other games that we haven't covered that you think are worthy of mentioning? Because I know there are a lot of DOS games there.
If you like word games, I think the Hangman game is good. I've worked a long time on creating a word list. There's like 12,000 words that come with the Hangman game.
Yeah, you got two versions of that, I think. Two word lists.
Well, yeah, there's an adult word list also.
There you go.
Let's see. There's a Mastermind game that's good. Yahtzee. Life.
What does the game of Life do?
It's just a recreation of the Parker Brothers board game of Life.
Yeah, haven't played that one. I must download it and see what it's like.
You know, you start out and you choose if you're going to go to college or not, and you just go through the board and get paydays and land on different things and buy a house and buy insurance, and sometimes you get rich, sometimes you don't.
What's the object of the game?
To end up with the most money at the end of the game.
So is that a multiplayer game you can play with others?
Yes.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, that sounds good. That must have taken you quite a bit of work, because with those games that are so structured and predefined, you've got to get the rules right and allow for a whole lot of eventualities.
Yeah, and I had to have help. Somebody read me each square of the board, and I typed it in, and so that did take a lot of work. That was one of the first games I wrote. That was a long time ago, though. I don't think I remember all the work I put into that one, actually. But
you must get a lot of feedback from people, but judged on just how many people have written to main menu to say, get Jim Kitchen on the program, do you get a lot of email from folks around the place?
Yes. Over the years, I've gotten a lot of email and phone calls from, you know, all over the United States, actually all over the world, and that's been really special to me. That's meant more to me than money ever could have, and that's why I continue to not charge for the games. I just appreciate hearing from everybody that likes the games and appreciate them.
So if people would like to take a look at the library of games that you have, where do people go to find them?
My website address is www.simcon.net/JKITCHEN. Simcon is SIMCON.net.
I just love it. Kitchen Sink. That's a very clever name.
Thanks. Kind of comes out sounding like Kitchen Sink, huh?
Exactly.
Actually,
when I logged onto the site with the Deck Talk, I thought, first of all, that's what it was saying. So it's very clever.
Thank you.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show and having a chat to us, and we'll look forward to monitoring when you get another brainwave and seeing what you came up with next.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. It was a pleasure to meet you and be on your show.